Hello, this is Michael Zuber, and I wanted to thank you for choosing to spend a little time with One Rental at a Time. My life's mission is to help investors close 1 million rental properties. In order to tackle this crazy goal, I will need your help. If you like this episode or any of the content we produce, please share it on social media. If you get one of my books or perhaps one of our 500 cards, please take a selfie and tag One Rental at a Time. Now on with the show. Alrighty, folks, I'm about to bring you a true treasure, someone that I have found in the universe that has done something that very, very few people have. I want to give a special shout out to Ryan Pineda. It is on his podcast that I found Kelly Roach. Kelly, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, why don't you do me a favor? Tell the audience who is Kelly, and then we will get into what I think is so unique about you and your story.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a business growth strategist and a peak performance mentor. I am a wife and mom. I've been with my husband for 18 years. I have a 10-year-old daughter named Madison. And I share that because I think it's so important as entrepreneurs to remember why we're doing what we're doing, right? And I love to say I'm a faith and family first entrepreneur. I love helping people to build really big, successful, and profitable businesses. But I think what's really special about the way that I teach and how I run my own, I have six companies of my own, is that I've never forgotten what matters in life. And I want to help lots of other people to do the same.
That is amazing. So this is what I think is unique about Kelly and what I caught from Ryan's podcast is going way back to when you were in college. Mm-hmm. You were always very focused. Yeah. You got out of college and you were an amazing employee, which if I look at myself, I was an amazing employee.
Yeah.
What makes you unique is at some point you became an entrepreneur. You kind of did it part-time until it got to some point, then made the full leap. And I don't know many people, Kelly, that were great employees, top 1%, just total animals, and then also became just rock stars, run six companies, and amazing entrepreneurs. So I just want to go, you know, how does that land? I mean, when you look at what you've done so far, do you see it that way? Or is it just, hey, this is who Kelly is?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I like to think of myself as someone that sits very firmly in gratitude. So I will say, like, I'm unbelievably thankful for what I've been able to create and build. And, you know, my first company, I built it to eight figures. We've been on the Inc. 5000 list multiple times. Like, I've achieved a lot of, you know, special and amazing things over the years. And so I definitely sit in gratitude for that. And I think, you know, I was gifted with the gifts that I have equally shown up to do the hard work, but I also believe that I was given those gifts to even be able to do what I do, right? So I don't take credit for that. I am grateful to God for those gifts. But at the same time, I feel like I haven't even scratched the surface. To be perfectly honest, like when I look at my career and when I look at like, okay, you know, where I am and what I would like to do, right. I feel like I'm like this little itty bitty baby that's still like, you know, trying to get this party started. So I try to hold that in tension. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love that. Well, yeah. Well, let's go back to that transition. And again, I listened to this interview about a month ago or so, and I've listened to it a second time to prepare for this. You get out of college, as I understand the story, you get a sales job. You're mm-hmm. very good at what you do. Yeah. You work, you do the work, if
yeah.
you will.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you get opportunities for management, which you first look at as almost a demotion, right? You get, yeah. you get given a problem child. Yes. So let's just talk about Kelly, the employee. So what was Kelly like as an employee and how did you stand out in that part?
Yeah. I mean, I was just ruthless and not ruthless towards just other ruthless. People. I was always very kind and, you know, I never felt like I needed to step on anyone to have success, I will say, but like I was ruthless with myself.
Right.
And so I was the first one in the morning every single day. I was the last one out at the end of the day. I went into the office on the weekends. Like, I was so determined to just create a different life for myself than what I had been brought up with that I was willing to do whatever it took. And I just basically saw it as like, if it's going to be, it's up to me. And so, you know, I just wanted to learn as much as I could, do as much as I could, contribute as much as I could, and see how fast I could create change, create positive change in my life, you know, to, you know, I think like I grew up in a house where my parents were constantly arguing about the bills and how we were going to pay the bills and how we were going to pay school tuition and how we were going to go grocery shop. And it was just, it was never ending. It was like, it
Right.
was a record that was on repeat every day of my life. And I was like, you know, here's the deal, right? There are things in life that are controllable and things that are uncontrollable. If someone gets sick, if you get in a car accident, if you know something out of nowhere happens, that's uncontrollable, right? Our financial situation is completely controllable. Unless you have such a severe mental or physical disability that you are not able, your financial situation is controllable. And so for me, I was like, okay, there's going to be things that come up in my life that are uncontrollable that I'm just going to have to deal with. But at least the controllables, I want to do as much as I can to put in a great place, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I hear about your story, you get your first sales job. What I really took from that was, again, you were in early, out late, you're ruthless with yourself. But I actually think you had a unique mindset for any age, let alone a young person, where you're like, I'm gonna absorb all the lessons from this job because I know it will feed me later. A lot of people look at entry-level jobs as I'm just selling an hour of my life. I'm going to do the minimum. And you were like, I'm going to absorb everything I can from that.
Yeah.
Is that
It's a
just who you are?
huge, no, yeah. And I mean, it's a huge, huge problem in society. And it's a huge, it's, I see it in entrepreneurship all the time. Like, you know, I think people are proud to like disparage their job that they had before they became
Yeah.
an entrepreneur. And I'm like, you missed the whole point. Like, going to work for a large company that's a $1 billion company and getting to go sit there and absorb what they did and how they become successful, and then figuring out what you like and what you don't like about that to go out and innovate and build something of your own. Like, that's such an incredible blessing. And I feel like there's such entitlement now, you know, around like an entry level job. And for me, like, I give credit every single day. Like, the only reason I've been able to do what I've been able to do is because of what I learned in my
Right.
decade of working in corporate, because I made the most of that opportunity. I got promoted 7 times in 8 years. I was running 17 branches. And I think it's crazy because I think that everybody wants the outcome of success, but they don't want to go through the process, which
Don't
is,
want to do the work. It's supposed to
yeah,
be easy.
it's laying the bricks. You gotta lay the bricks, because the thing is otherwise you're creating a house of cards. So you can get the fast success without having the foundation, and then the success crumbles as quickly as you got it. Or you can build the foundation for success, and now you have a firm foundation to build on for the rest of your life. And so, you know, I think the same thing goes for entrepreneurship, to be completely honest. I think people, when they start a new business, they're so like frustrated, like they don't want to have to sell and they don't want to have to send people DMs or get on the phone with people or like do these things. And I'm like, how are you going to ever build a sales team? How are you going to build a marketing division? How are you going to run a company successfully if you're trying to hire someone to figure something out that you couldn't figure out or weren't willing to? And I think this is why so many businesses fail. We want to like skip over the ugly parts, you know? I don't know. It's interesting.
So I was in sales for 25 plus years. We had comp plans in software that were either 60, 40 or 50, 50, right? The comp versus base, just so the audience keeps up with us. When you came out of school, did you have a similar comp plan or was it kind of different?
Mine was, I had a base in like the 30s, you know, like
Okay. So
30 thousand.
you were
Yeah.
highly leveraged.
So I had a base that was like in the 30s. And then we had like a bonus plan that was based on hitting our budget, right?
Right. Yep.
Which I pretty much single-handedly could like do enough to like make my entire branch or division like hit the goals, which I did. So I
Wow.
maxed out my bonus plan, which was awesome. You know, so I was able to grow my income through getting promotions, and then I was
Got it.
able to make the bonuses, and I kind of put all that away to start like wealth building and, you know.
I like it. So we're gonna, so Kelly, the individual contributor, rock star, killing it, hit, absorbing bonuses, carrying your team, it sounds like many times. Then you get promoted to take on a, I'll call it troubled branch. I may be using the wrong word, underachieving branch. You know this, but again, for the audience, not all great salespeople make great managers. That those skill sets don't translate all the time. So talk about that first transition.
First of all, I didn't even want to make the transition, but
Yeah.
I loved my manager. He ended up being my mentor for 15 years, and I owe a lot of my career success to him, and I had an immense amount of trust in him. And you know, he like very strongly encouraged me to do this, and he's like, it's going to pay off, and it's going to open up your ability to, you know, move up in the organization, because it was, you said it was a poor performing branch. It was basically like the worst branch in the country.
The worst branch. Wait. Hey.
It was really bad. So I mean, transitioning into that, you know, on one hand, it was exciting and I was like, cool, okay, you know, I'm starting this new thing, whatever. On the other hand, like it was very difficult for me. I think I was 21 years old, to have the patience. I'm used to moving at this like speed of light, right? And so now I'm like hiring brand new people. I'm firing, you know, the old, you know, that were in the branch before. You're going through this process. It's so slow. It's so
Oh,
arduous. The turnaround, like, you know, and so it was just like, it was a great exercise in patience and maturity and, you know, not having instant gratification, you know. And it was one of those things where it was like a leap of faith for me, because I was like, I'm really taking a step back from like what's working well for me and taking a risk going over here. But the payoff is now I'm going to get visibility from a company standpoint to be able to show like, you know, what I can do. So it was a rocky road, definitely. I didn't have a lot of patience for people in the beginning, and I had to learn, you know, what's the difference between a manager and a leader, which those differences are vast, right? So that was an interesting learning curve for sure.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because I think that transition really plays with being an entrepreneur. Maybe I'm wrong, but being an individual contributor who has their own comp plan, it's kind of like I work, I eat, right? I eat what I kill, if you will. But going on to be a manager where you're responsible for six, seven individuals, they're all at different skill levels, different experience. You know, some have to be fired, some have to be hired. That's a
It's a
different
totally
game.
different skill set. And what's so interesting is I see that transition. A lot of people in the world of entrepreneurship really struggle with that transition, right? Because they've become so reliant on themselves as a producer, and then, you know, they never quite make the transition to going from getting results to getting results through others. And then they're like, I've built myself a jail, because if I stop, the business stops. And so I wrote a book about it, actually, because when I got into the entrepreneurial world, I realized like, holy crap, there's no resources to teach entrepreneurs how to build a winning team. And this is a huge problem, because entrepreneurs think that they're coming into entrepreneurship and they're going to have freedom and they're going to have all this time and money and it's going to be so fun, right? And then they get in here and they're like, what is this? I'm working 80 hours a week. I'm doing it all. I can never take a break. I can never take a vacation. And the answer to that is building a winning team. Absolutely. And you know, a lot of people think building a winning team is like, I'm going to go hire some people and then they're going to do it. And nah, it's
No,
not.
not
Right?
that.
It's becoming a great leader. It's becoming an extraordinary leader that inspires people, that casts vision, that cultivates talent, that, you know, empowers people to want to lead within your organization. So, you know, it's a whole different skill set, but it's so fulfilling. You know, it goes from being very, very frustrating to being very, very fulfilling. You just have to stick with it long enough to cross the bridge and invest in learning the skills, because it is a totally different skill set, you know.
So did I hear earlier you were quote unquote an employee, was it for 8 to 10 years, something like that?
Over 10 years. Yeah.
So let's call it 10 years for between friends. At what point of that journey did Kelly start to think about being an entrepreneur? Or perhaps that whole journey you thought maybe you were an entrepreneur?
No, I mean, I never, my goal was not to be an entrepreneur. My goal was to be a corporate executive. I was going to make a lot of money and I was going to sit in the boardroom and I was going to do all the things, planes and trains and, you know, all that. And
All
then
that.
I experienced all of that and I was like, yeah, no, this is not life.
For
I'm
me.
not doing this. And a big thing for me though was I was making this one company millions of dollars, and I got to the point where fulfillment in the impact of what I was doing moved up because, you know, it's like there's a hierarchy of needs, right? When I was first building my career, it was all about how do I create financial freedom? How do I, you know, have success, learn skills, blah, blah, blah. But as you climb that and you're like, now you have financial freedom, and now you're like, I want to have a life. I want to impact people. I want to self-actualize. I want to do work that matters, you know, and that was when I kind of realized I was probably at least 8 years in before I even thought about, you know, starting my own business. And for me, like the fulfillment piece was like a huge, huge part of that. And then also, let's be honest. So I work for a publicly traded company. They're on the stock market, which means that like the CEO salaries are publicly, you know, accessible. And I looked up the CEO's salary of the US and I was like, I can easily make that in my own business, which I have, and I do make more than that. And so I was like, yeah, it's, I'm not, she's traveling 44 weeks a year. I was
No,
like, I'm not signing up for that life. So it was, you know, it was a lot of things, but no, it wasn't my initial intention, but it became clear to me over time that I wasn't going to get to the life that I wanted to working for someone else. I needed to go out and do the work and create it, you know?
It's funny. I had a similar aha moment. You know, you're individual contributor, your first line, your second line, and you know, Pop gets pretty good, second line manager of a, you know, a billion-dollar software company. But then you kind of look up at the people above you, right? You're only one or two rungs away from the CEO job, and you look at, I looked at those individuals, and Kelly, there was nothing about their life I wanted. Nothing.
No,
Too
that
much
was me.
travel, too much stress, unhealthy, addicted to too much stuff, on their second or third
Yep,
marriage, have a
exactly.
side piece. I mean, it's like, what? I don't want any of that.
Yeah,
Oh,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
crazy. All right, so you have this moment, you start thinking about it at year eight. Did you go through lots of potential, you know, what may started as a side hustle and then you found your main hustle, or how was that transition?
No, I mean, I did kind of think about different things, but I never actually started anything until I started my actual first business, which is I still have today. It's called the Business Advisory. It's a coaching and consulting company for entrepreneurs. And I started off doing sales training, you know, for smaller businesses because that's really, I had built this just exceptional track record in this. And I was like, if I taught this to small businesses, like this would change the game for people, right? So I kind of started that way. And then it expanded out because it became very clear very quickly that like sales was not an isolated singular problem, right? It was more than that. And so then, you know, it merged. But yeah, so I didn't start until I really started. And you know, you mentioned this earlier. I started as a side hustle. I let my company know. I let them know and I said, you know, you can fire me if you want, but this is what I'm doing and I need to do this. And they were like, okay, you know, and so I said, I'm gonna keep my results, I'm gonna keep my areas, the top performing in the country. And when it's not working out anymore, you know, you let me know. But I was good with that. I was at the point where I was like, this is what I'm doing with my life. And I still loved the work that I was doing. I just knew that it was not,
Yeah, it was time.
and it wasn't the end game, you know?
Yeah, there you go. Well, you mentioned you wrote a book, and I failed to ask what the title was. What is the book?
Oh, well, I wrote many books, but the book about team that I was talking about is called Bigger Than You, and it's called Bigger Than You, The Entrepreneur's Guide to Building an Unstoppable Dream Team.
Awesome. Bigger than you. And we go to Amazon, or is it on your
Yeah,
website,
you
or
can
where do
go to
we go?
Amazon, you can go to Kelly Roach Coaching, any of those. But yeah, Amazon one click. And yeah, it's just really, it breaks down kind of the six core components of how to go from hiring someone to really elevating them and developing them and cultivating them into top talent for your organization to start building a true winning team.
Sure.
So yeah.
Yeah. Folks, I will put a link below to one of her books. I'll list them all out there in the show notes just so you have them. Bigger Than You will be the one at the top of the list. But I actually want to go back to that conversation you had with your job. It's really telling, right? I've had similar conversations over the years where a top performer comes to you and they basically say, hey, I have this other passion. I'm going to start it now. FYI, I'm doing the right thing. I'm not hiding it from you.
Yeah.
And when the company comes back and goes, thank you, you're good, we want to keep you, that just tells you how valuable you are,
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
and I
That
knew that. I mean, to be honest, I knew that. I knew I was making them so many tens of millions of dollars. I had given far more than I had received, and I think they knew that too. And that's why it's good to live by you reap what you sow, right?
right.
Because I had been the first one in and the last one out for 10 years. I had developed amazing people. My successor had already been built and elevated and promoted through the company. So even if I left, I knew my area could continue to grow and thrive. And that's why I think having a service first mentality at whatever you do is so important. I don't care whether you're waiting tables, be the best waitress in the place. You're an admin, be the best admin there ever was. You're a mechanic, be the best mechanic, because you don't know how that is going to play into the bigger picture of your life. And you don't
Right.
know how doing your best with where you are and what you've got is going to become a stepping stone for where you want to go and who you want to become. And I think a lot of people are very short-sighted in that respect, both in their own businesses as well as when they work for someone else. And I think that change alone would fundamentally impact the direction of so many people's lives.
Yeah. I love all of that. So now let's make the transition. You go from being a top 1% employee,
Yeah.
my words, not yours, and now you switch over an entrepreneur, right? You did the side hustle for a while. That grew to became the main hustle. You leave the job behind. It's a parting is friends, but now you're doing this new thing. So let's
Yeah.
talk about that first year or two.
Yeah. So I built my business to about seven figures. We were actually over seven figures while I was still employed. And then I went full time with the company. I actually stayed on as a consultant for about a year, just like an hour a week
Yeah.
here and there, and whatever.
Sure.
And then, within about 18 months, I took the business from seven to eight figures.
Wow.
And I mean, it was a wild ride. But it was great, and it's been crazy, and it's been really hard, and there's been a lot of high highs, and there's been a lot of low lows, and a lot of sacrifice, and a lot of really great days, and a lot of really bad days. And
Yeah.
I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't change anything. I'm so thankful for the opportunities that entrepreneurship has created. I mean, my business is the reason I was able to, have my husband be home full time with my daughter since she was born, which was probably the greatest blessing of our entire life. One would be her, and two would be him being able to be home with her.
Right.
And just the freedom and the peace and what that's been able to do for our family life and our marriage, and just the ability to actually have the benefits of entrepreneurship. I think it's really hard when both people are pursuing outside careers, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that if that's what people want. But I think it's a great blessing when you can have the freedom to have, one person in the family that is available, that is
Right.
not distracted and constantly, required to be on focus, on something else other than,
Forgive me, I don't know in the timeline when Madison was born. Were you an employee or were you the full-time entrepreneur?
I was an employee and had my business.
So you were,
This is
okay, right at
so
the
this
end.
is wild. So I had just like so I was so let's see, I started my business in 2012. I had Madison in 2014.
Okay.
So at the when I so dial the clock back, I found out in 2013, obviously, that I'm, pregnant with Madison. So my business had just started taking off. Just started taking off. And we were like, surprise, you're pregnant. And I was like,
Yay!
oh my fucking God. Like, all right. So we're so happy, of course. And I'm like, this is going to be really interesting, right? Because now I have the baby. I'm breastfeeding Madison. I'm pumping at work. I'm like bringing my, I'm like trying to like take a lunch break and do sales calls on my, it was wild. But I always say, like, this is the thing. Every time in life that you think something is your handicap, it's always the biggest blessing that is meant to be your catalyst. And I say that a million times over to people because when I was starting my business, I think the first thing that I felt was this like little bit of victim mentality, like I don't have full time to focus on my business. Everybody else is working on their dream all day and I have to do this job and blah, 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 whatever. And what ended up happening was I learned how to build a business in a couple hours a day that could produce $1 million plus for my family, which meant that when I transitioned to becoming a full-time entrepreneur, I never was that person that was working 80 hours a week as an entrepreneur. I never was because I had to learn how to prioritize. I had to learn how to focus. I had to narrow in what I was spending my time and energy on down to the things that really mattered and really moved the needle. And so now looking back on it, I'm so glad that I didn't have like carte blanche, like, oh, work 24 hours a day and, whatever, because I think that's the routine that a lot of people get in. But it's like, it actually doesn't take that to build a successful business. But I think a lot of people do that in avoidance of the real work, to be perfectly honest.
The effort will fill the time, right? If
Oh,
you only have a
100%.
couple hours. Yeah, it's
That's it.
exactly.
That's it.
So one of the things I'm just curious about, you obviously had a conversation with your husband at some point, maybe it was during pregnancy or shortly thereafter, about, hey, one of us is going to stay home. And right now, when I look at the scoreboard, my number's bigger. So how did that conver was it just an easy conversation? Did it make
It
sense? Was
was.
it?
It was
Okay.
super easy. So we had actually been having that conversation like even before
Okay.
like as we were progressing in our relationship and had decided that we, wanted to have a family, we were going to get married, all of these things, we had decided that one of us was going to be home. At the time, we were both in corporate jobs. So he was running health clubs, I was doing my thing, whatever. And we were both kind of like, whatever, one of us will be home, right? Then by the time, by the fast forward to when I was pregnant with Madison, when I got pregnant with Madison, he was doing the job and hated the job and was like, could care less about the job. And I was doing the job, but I had started the business and the business was starting to take off. And I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I want to do with the rest of my life. I was super. So it was very easy for us. We were like, let's go. This is it. Like,
Makes
we already
sense.
knew that that was the path that we wanted to go. And he wasn't like holding on to that. He's also a musician. He writes and records his own music and he has been for forever and a day. And so for him, it was very easy for him to let go of the corporate job and be like, oh, I can like work
Okay.
more in my studio and have more flexibility and, all of that. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
So you were on your mission and he just had a job. So it was a very easy. I love that. I love that. All right. So now the other, you've done so many amazing things. Again, I don't know anybody in my circle or even my second circle that has done what you've done. So let's talk about going from your seven figures to an eight figure business. Because again, like going from an employee to that first line manager, what gets you to a million ain't getting you to 10 million is my guess.
People, right? So, obviously I teach something called the live launch method, and we live launched our way from seven to eight figures, but a lot of people look at business and they look at business growth from a very one-dimensional perspective and they think like, oh, you just have to figure out how to get enough clients. No, because what people don't understand is you'll lose the clients as fast as you got them. If you don't have the systems, the team, the operations, the leadership, all of those things. So it was fun and exciting. And it was also a very painful process because you go through, when you're looking for leaders for your organization, which I'm very blessed, I have an unbelievable team, both leaders and producers in my company. But that was not a straight path. I went through a lot of the wrong people, a lot of mishires. I was betrayed. I had people that did all sorts of crazy horrible. Like, I went through all the things that everybody goes through, right? It's not unique to me. It's not woe is me. I'm fine. Everything's fine. But I mean, I went through a lot in that process. And I 100%, having done it, know why most people will never make it there. Because the amount of emotional resilience that you have to get through, I'll call it like the iterations of like the things that don't work out on the path to things actually working out. Like, so much doesn't work out. Like 95% doesn't work out, right? And it's the ability to maintain that resilience and be like, okay, all right, we're still alive. We can do this. Like, okay, that didn't work. Like, let's fix it. So
let's pivot.
You know,
yeah.
For us, I would say the sales and marketing side was far easier because that's my strength. But even though I love managing people and I do consider myself a strong leader, when you're scaling people really fast.
Oof. Yeah.
It's a wild ride.
There you go.
It's a wild ride.
Yeah. And then the other thing I took away from the end of Ryan's interview, this may be me interpreting. So if it's wrong, just tell me, but you've gotten to a point, it seems like, where you're like, you know what? I'm going to take my foot off the gas at least a little bit, right? You had been going 1,000 miles an hour forever.
Yeah.
But it seems to be at this point, you're like, you know what? I don't want to call it coast, but you're not going 1,000 miles an hour either. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like if an average person witnessed what I'm doing, they would think I was going 1,000 miles an hour.
Right.
Like, I'm still like, I'm doing like, you know, I'm launching, I'm doing podcasts, I'm doing that. Right. But to me, like from my own pace, like absolutely. Because the thing is I think one thing that has served me well is like, I know when it's time to recognize that when you sacrifice and work so hard to make a dream come true, and then you're stupid enough to not recognize it and take the time to like enjoy it with the people that you love. You know, Madison's at such a critical age right now.
Yeah,
she's 10. Like, this is everything, right?
I agree.
And we know it. And both my husband and I, like, we really, really deeply know that. And so for me, I'm just at a place where I'm like, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. Like,
right.
I don't need to make stupid short-term decisions to take time away from my family or from, you know, my health or whatever the case. Like, I'm so much more, I would say, ruthless about like self-care and prayer and exercise and time with my family now than I am with like, how fast are we growing? Because the other thing that I really learned, especially over the last like 3-4 years, I've seen so many people in the online space, especially, come and go, rise and fall. And I took that warning shot like really seriously. And I feel like for me, I'm very focused on the long game. Like, I'm very much looking at what I'm going to do over the next decade, far more than what I'm going to do over the next 6 months. And I think you walk differently when that's the case. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I do have a question. And you're absolutely right. So you don't know me at all. We're just learning each other. My daughter's 31. So she's on the other side, right? She's not 10. And I got to tell you that 9 to 12-year-old, that is like everything.
It's everything.
So everything. So, I mean, the one thing I have very few regrets in life, but one of them is I didn't get enough hugs for my daughter. Right. Or I got some, I wish I had more, right. It's just, I wish I had more.
Yeah.
So get more, go get another one for Madison.
I will.
I am curious, when you step back and you think about Madison at 20 or 30, what do you hope she has learned from you and your husband? What do you hope she's taken away from what you have?
I think first and foremost, just resilience, right? And I think she sees that from us. And you know, I think resilience, I think mental toughness, I think morals and ethics. You know, I take time with her every day to try and really instill in her like what it looks like and means to be like a quality human being. You know, and I think that's getting pushed further and further out of society and everyday life. And so, like, if we don't as parents initiate it, like, we're not to assume that that will be there. And work ethic, you know, because I think that when you have work ethic, then you look at your life as a canvas that you can design and create
Yes.
an impact. And when you don't have work ethic, you look at everything in your life as if someone else is the one that is responsible or did it to you or did it, you know, in spite of you or whatever the case. So I think resilience, morality, ethics, mental toughness, work ethic, like these are the things that I think will serve her long term. And then wherever she goes and whatever she does, those things are going to serve her, you know.
I love that. I love that. I know it's too early to ask, but I'm going to ask anyway. Do you have any thoughts about Madison going to college? Thumbs up, thumbs down, don't care, whatever she chooses.
Well, I'll tell you what I told her. And
Okay.
what I told her was that if she starts a business, I'll be an investor in it. But if she goes to college, she has to pay for it herself.
Oh, I love that. There's an
So,
answer for you.
and listen, if she wants to go to college, I will support her. I think that's amazing. I went to college. I had a wonderful experience. I loved it. My college experience really had nothing to do with going to class, and what I do in my business has nothing to do with anything that I learned. It was more of a social experiment. But you know, and I don't, I think that's wonderful if she decides to do that. But I think that there's like this disassociation with college debt now, with this loan forgiveness and all of that stuff. And I'm just not, I don't want to facilitate that mentality.
Right.
So, yeah.
I like it. I like it. I love that answer, by the way. I've never had that one. Like,
Yeah.
hey, I'll invest in your business, but if you're going to college, that's on you. I
Yeah.
actually really love that answer. When you look at what's going on, we've talked about social media and we've talked about people not doing the work and wanting stuff for
Yeah.
free. A lot of social media, my words, not yours, is get rich quick. It's
Yeah.
easy.
Yeah.
It's just not how the system works, right, Kelly?
Yeah. No, it's just not how the system works. And you know, like, it's really interesting with the online world because, like, if you look at any truly successful person, they work unbelievably hard and they care about their work and they do work that matters to them and they have big vision and they're willing to sacrifice to make that vision a reality. Like any truly successful person, like I've never met a successful person, like a truly successful person that doesn't have those attributes. But it's just very interesting that when you look online, that's the exact opposite of what is portrayed by people that want you to think that they're successful. But you know, it's kind of like the difference between do you do things that make you wealthy or do you do things that make you look wealthy? And I think that you just have to exercise a little bit of critical thinking. You need to think for yourself. You need to be a little bit counterculture. I live in Florida. I'm so happy that Ron DeSantis just passed a law that kids that are under, I think, 14 or something, like, aren't
Yeah,
allowed to
something
have
like that.
social media. We wouldn't have let Madison anyway. But like, yeah, I mean, I think that there's just it's very interesting for me because I build an eight-figure business using social media. I
Right.
live launch doing live streams on video. Like that's how I make my money. So I will never sit here and say like, oh, like social media is bad and blah 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 blah. But I think that you have to have a healthy relationship with what you're seeing on social media. I personally don't consume on social media. I haven't for many years. So that I think has helped me a lot as an entrepreneur because I'm not comparing myself
Right.
to other people. I'm sitting and owning my own space and talking to my own husband about what do we want for our life? What does our dream life look like? What do we want our relationship to look like? Instead of saying, well, you know, in my mind, I have this idea in the back of my head because I saw this thing and now I feel like we should be doing this thing or we should be doing, you know what I'm saying? Like, and
Oh,
I
yeah.
think there's a lot of adverse effects that people don't even realize. It's like subconscious programming that people don't even realize that they're subjected to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've worked in tech for the last 20 years or before, I guess 26 years ago or for 26 years. And the last 10 years was around AI, machine learning, basically algorithms, right? That's what social media is built on. And a lot of people want to blame the algorithm. And I always laugh at that because the algorithm is giving you what you click on.
It's so true. It's
The
so
algorithm is a non-feeling thing. It's like, you
exactly.
wanted this? Let's give you more because they want you time on app. So I keep telling people, if you feel scared, nervous, envious, afraid, any of these negative attributes after you look at social media, that's on you.
And you have to change your behavior and then you'll get served different things. Like I go on YouTube every morning and I type in like morning prayer, right? And I'll just like I'll pick a different meditation, different prayer or whatever, and in the morning. And so like that's what's gonna pop up for me, right?
Exactly.
But yes, that's very interesting.
It's really, I did an
I feel
experiment.
you
So
on that. I
yeah,
feel you on that.
it's really weird. So I did an experiment. So Twitter or X, in my opinion, is the most nasty, nasty of all the social medias. Most negative, just terrible. So I had a social media following probably around 4 or 5,000, so a decent amount, and it was full of scare tactics, doom. So I spent 2 weeks daily blocking doomers and watching positive content. In 14 days, my Twitter or X feed is nothing but good
That's so
news,
cool.
happiness, puppies. Even
Oh, that's
the
awesome.
cesspool of Twitter can be cleaned up in 2 weeks.
Absolutely. It's
Take some ownership, people.
like anything else. It's like anything else.
So again, having done something that I don't know if anybody else has done, being a great employee and a great entrepreneur, I've never asked anybody this because I've never known anybody to ask this. Is one easier than the other?
It's a great question. It's a really great question, and no one's ever asked me that before. And I think what's interesting is, and maybe you're this way, but like for me, when I was an employee, like all the pressure that I felt was pretty much self-imposed
Correct.
because I wanted to get promoted. I wanted to get the bonus. I wanted to earn the income, all of those things. I think the hardest thing became for me as my business acumen grew and I wanted to become more entrepreneurial and I was working in that corporate environment, I started hitting those walls of like I couldn't grow anymore, which is why I had to leave. I think there's different pressures. I think being an employee, you don't carry all the weight of the legal and the insurance and the payroll and like all of those stresses that you carry as a business owner. But you do carry the weight of being like under someone else's thumb, but then also still being accountable, which is a very strange, dynamic. I think they both have their pros and cons. I think that for some people, they belong as an employee. I think for some people, they're great as an entrepreneur, be terrible employee. I wish for more people that they would find a way to bridge in a
I mean,
positive way.
maybe because you are who you are, you've seen lots of people kind of make that leap. I am really scratching my head right now to think about people that I would call the top, because I know plenty of entrepreneurs that were employees, but to your point, they were horrible employees. They just were horrible, right? And I know some people that are okay entrepreneurs, like they can pay the bills, but they really should be employees, right? That's their natural skill, but you have the ability to do both. So do you, what is it about Kelly? I mean, do you know what your superpower is? Like, if somebody were to ask you what Kelly's superpower is, what would you say your superpower is?
I think a couple of things. I think focus, definitely. Like I don't have bright, shiny object syndrome, and I have a very large capacity. Like I can run multiple companies and be completely focused without like leaping and hopping from thing to thing to thing. So I would say focus and discipline. And then I think just from the standpoint of helping other people, I think the thing that has allowed me to help make a big impact has been taking complex things and making them simple. Like as a teacher, as a mentor, as a coach, my superpower is taking something that feels really overwhelming and complex and making it simple so that the average person can actually have success with something that might otherwise feel out of reach.
Very, very cool. Well, this is a question that may go sideways on me because you are a CEO of six companies already. I will share with you a bugaboo I have, and you can just tell me I'm wrong, which is totally cool. I have a hard, I it it drives me crazy when I hear people talk about you need seven streams of income. Like that is the secret. In my opinion, and again, you could tell me I'm completely wrong. I don't know anybody that's successful, any of my millionaire friends or decamillionaires ever got there by doing seven things at the time. They all did
Absolutely.
one thing really, really well and then
Thousand
went up.
percent.
Oh,
Thousand
thank
percent.
God.
And people ask me all the time, they're like, when should I start another company? And I always tell them, when you're making millions of dollars, you have a great leadership team in place, and you can afford to take time away from the company and it can still grow without you.
Okay, good.
That's when it's time to start something new. My business was already thriving. And also for me, caveat, I run a very high touch coaching and consulting company that I did not want to scale to nine figures, which is
Got it.
why I started building other businesses because I knew that the integrity of what we were doing would be watered down if I started
Right.
hiring like dozens and dozens and dozens of people. So, no, I completely agree. And it was the same thing with me. I did one thing. So, a lot of people ask me, like go taking my first company from 7 to 8 figures, we had one primary launch with one primary offer, and that's how we did that. And we only began really expanding and breaking things out when we started to see the law of diminishing returns, where so much of what we were doing was being wasted because it was only a fit for this 1%. And then we're like,
Right.
let's build our own ecosystem because otherwise we just have to send these people out other places anyway. But I completely agree with you. And I think that's a huge, again, the people that are teaching that haven't done it. They're saying
Exactly.
you need seven streams of income, but they're like missing the context of like the people that have seven streams of income have that because they achieved a high level of success with one thing. And then it just becomes obvious that you're going to build out these other things that feed off of
Exactly.
that one thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. I actually did not know it was going to go that way. I thought you might be the first one to disagree with me. So
No, I totally
very,
agree. It's how
very
I
cool.
did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all the millionaires, multimillionaires, decamillionaires I know and I interact with, all of them did it the same way. They got ridiculously good at this one thing, whatever that one thing was. And then over time they branched out and they all kind of, you can see the puzzle pieces. So if somebody's watching this on my channel, they're excited about what you brought today, Kelly. Where can they go find out more about Kelly Roach and all the things that you have going on?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I would say just check out the podcast. Like the best place to come and get to know me and learn from me and be a part of my world is The Kelly Roach Show. I release two new episodes every single week, over 1,000 episodes. So you could literally like
Nice.
build a business and grow it for free just listening to my free episodes. But yeah, and Kelly Roach Official on Instagram. If you want to come connect, drop in my inbox and say hello.
There you go, folks. Do me a favor. Reach out to her on Instagram. Just say hi. Thank you for coming on One Rental at a Time. Let's give her some love for being here because she did not have to be here and she was amazing. Kelly, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.